Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Michael reading additional articles from the Odessa American, published Saturday, August 6th. Man Shot in Game Room Parking Lot by Kim Smith. Ector County Sheriff's deputies had a busy Thursday thanks to a shooting, a fight involving a tire iron, and an apparent road rage incident involving a gun. According to the ECSO, deputies received a 911 call around 11 p.m. Thursday about a man being shot during a disturbance in the parking lot of a game room in the 10,000 block of West University Boulevard. When they arrived, they found a 31-year-old man with a gunshot wound being tended by two people. Deputies cared for the man until paramedics arrived, and he was taken to Medical Center Hospital. His current condition was not available. According to an arrest affidavit, Nathaniel Ochoa, 27, was seen on surveillance video retrieving a pistol and firing it several times, striking the victim. Witnesses also identified Ochoa as the shooter. Investigators believe the shooting was due to an ex-spouse issue, an ECSO press release stated. Ochoa, who has denied his involvement, was arrested on suspicion of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon and on a warrant in a drug possession case. He remains in the Ector County Jail on surety bonds, totaling $75,000. The investigation is ongoing and additional arrests are expected. Deputies were also summoned to the 400 block of East Mulberry Thursday about a disturbance. While en route, they were told a man was chasing another man around with a tire iron. When the deputies arrived, a 25-year-old man told them that he and his cousin, Darby Elkins, 22, were arguing when Elkins left the home they shared, grabbed a tire iron, and broke his windshield. According to the report, Elkins began chasing him with the tire iron after he confronted him. The man told deputies Elkins then got into his Ford Expedition and began chasing him. The man's landlord corroborated the man's story. Elkins was booked into the Ector County Jail on suspicion of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, family violence, around 3:45 p.m. Thursday. He remains in custody on a $50,000 surety bond. Also on Thursday, deputies were called to the area of Highway 302 and Yukon Road about a rolling disturbance. While en route, deputies were told a man in a maroon Cadillac was following a 52-year-old man who was on the phone with a 911 dispatcher and that the driver of the Cadillac had pointed a gun at him. Deputies spotted the two vehicles in the 10,000 block of West 42nd Street and noticed the Cadillac was driving very close to the 911 caller, according to an ECSO report. Deputies pulled over the Cadillac at gunpoint and Anthony Miller, 21, was taken into custody without incident. Miller admitted to deputies he had a handgun in his car, the report stated. The 911 caller told deputies the driver of the Cadillac had been weaving and wouldn't let him pass, even forcing him off the roadway at Highway 302 and FM 1936, the report stated. The man also told deputies he had forced the Cadillac off the road once, and Miller pointed a gun at him, according to the report. The alleged victim told deputies when he pulled over near West Yukon and Highway 302, the man turned the caddy around, drove up to his vehicle, and pointed the gun at him again. The 911 caller told deputies the same man had also pulled a gun on him on February 18th and was driving the same car at that time, according to the report. Deputies found a gun in the caddy between the passenger seat and the center console, along with an extra magazine and a round of ammunition. Miller was arrested on suspicion of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon shortly before 7 p.m. Thursday. He remains in the Ector County Jail on a $50,000 surety bond. Local and state news roundup. Midland man sentenced to 25 years for virus-era attack on Asians. A Midland man has been sentenced to 25 years in prison for attacking an Asian family in 2020 because they thought they were Chinese and therefore responsible for the COVID-19 pandemic, according to federal court records. Jose Gomez III, 21, of Midland, was sentenced Thursday after pleading guilty to three counts of committing a hate crime. When pleading guilty in March, Gomez admitted that he used a knife to slash Bowie Kung and his 6 and 2-year-old sons inside a Sam's Club in Midland because he believed they were Chinese and spreading the coronavirus. Bowie Kung is from Myanmar. The March 2020 attack occurred as Asians faced verbal harassment and physical assaults across the United States after the virus began spreading nationwide. Gomez did not know the family when he followed them inside the store, federal authorities said in a statement. He followed them for several minutes because he perceived them to be a threat because they were from the country who started spreading that disease around, according to the statement. Gomez then purchased a serrated steak knife and slashed the three before a Sam's Club employee intervened, stopping the attack as Gomez yelled, "Get out of America," prosecutors said. Police make arrest in shooting. 11 months after an Odessa woman reported being shot at repeatedly by a man named Nike, Odessa police have made an arrest. On September 11th, 2021, a 29-year-old woman called 911 after her right front tire was shot out just north of the overpass at Highway 80 and Loop 338. According to an Odessa Police Department report, the woman told officers that while she was at Jaguar's Gold Club on East Carolina Road, she saw a man named Nike get rough with a 30-year-old acquaintance of hers, and that friend asked her for a ride home. The woman said Nike followed them in a yellow Dodge Challenger and began shooting at them near Trunk and East Loop 338. He continued to shoot at her until he shot out the right front tire of her Mazda and she was forced to pull over. According to the report, the woman said Nike got out of his car, pointed his gun at her face, and told her she shouldn't have gotten involved. He also tossed her phone and threw it away. The woman said her acquaintance told Nike not to hurt the woman and then got into the Challenger, the report stated. Officers found evidence the tire had been shot out and later identified the gunman as Nike Lee Johnson, 26, using social media photos, according to the report. An OPD officer knew Johnson had a girlfriend with the same name as the 30-year-old woman and that she owned a yellow Dodge Challenger, the report stated. Johnson was indicted on 2 counts of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon and was arrested Thursday. He's also being held on 2 failure-to-appear warrants issued in connection with the 2021 aggravated robbery case and a Brazoria County warrant charging him with aggravated assault with a deadly weapon. In the aggravated robbery case, Johnson is accused of shooting another man with a firearm while stealing from him in April 2021. Brother turns brother in on weapons issue. A 28-year-old Odessa man was arrested on a weapons charge Thursday after his brother called police on him. According to an Odessa Police Department report, a resident in the 4900 block of Lancaster Drive called 911 and said Abraham Hernandez was in a storage shed in the backyard firing a weapon. Officers saw Hernandez on a security camera with a 9mm Ruger handgun in his hand and heard a gunshot, the report stated. Officers set up a perimeter and got Hernandez to come out of the shed. After they took him into custody and read him his Miranda rights, Hernandez told the officers he had just bought the gun and test fired it into the ground next to the shed he lives in, the report stated. Hernandez was arrested on suspicion of discharging a firearm in certain municipalities. He was released the same day after posting a $1,000 surety bond.
Hello, friends. This is Julie reading from the Odessa American, Sunday, August 7th. Sentencing guidelines are complicated by Kim Smith. Angelica Garcia received 40 years in a double fatal DWI crash. Facebook posters complained she didn't get life. Michael Breeding received 10 years for indecency with a child. Facebook posters called it a slap on the ham. Some noted drug users have gotten more time. Former Ector County District Attorney Bobby Bland said he doesn't miss the job he had for 15 years and one of the biggest reasons why the criticism that was part of the parcel of the position. A friend of mine said being a district attorney is the process of slowly alienating all of your electorates because people get mad for who you prosecute and how you prosecute, Bland said. Eventually, people are going to have someone they like get prosecuted by you and or they're going to know someone that's a victim, and they're not going to like the results. People just naturally have an emotional reaction to sentences, but they don't necessarily realize all the factors that lead to sentencing, local attorneys agree. When someone enters a plea agreement or is convicted at trial, they receive a sentence that is outside the range dictated by state lawmakers. For example, someone convicted of a Class 2 felony, such as intoxication manslaughter, like Garcia, can only receive a sentence from 2 to 20 years in prison per count. When it comes to a plea agreement, prosecutors are still required to remain in the appropriate range. However, prosecutors have a multitude of factors they look at when determining where within the range they land or like to land. If prosecutors only have uncooperative witnesses, they're more likely to offer a plea agreement. Extra County District Attorney Dustin Gallivan said, "Other times, pleas are offered if witnesses can't be located or if the case is weak or for some other reason," he said. "It could be if in a child case, the child is young and we don't want to put them on the stand and put them through direct or cross-examination. Have them actually have to sit there and look at the person who hurt them. I mean, that's worth a lot. That's a lot of trauma for a kid to go through if they've never been a witness," Galvin said. Prosecutors also rely on history when working with a plea agreement. Galvin said, "We've been doing this for a while. We have an understanding of what a jury might do in a lot of cases, so we try to fit our offers within the range for judiciary economy," Galvin said. "Yeah, we could go for life on every Class 1 felony case, but a jury is not going to give life on every case, so why waste their time? Why waste our time? Prosecuting cases isn't about racking up convictions," Galvin said. "It is justice." So we try to take into account all the circumstances of the case, from a victim's standpoint, from the defense's standpoint, and the stretch of evidence, etc. A good plea effort makes nobody happy. We're not happy because we wanted to go to trial and maybe get more. They're not happy because they think they could have had less. But it's an agreement to mitigate the risk, Galvin said. Bland, who is now a criminal defense attorney, agreed. "You try to get the best results, and usually that means both sides are a little unhappy," Bland said. When he was DA, Bland said he stopped looking at social media comments and advised his attorneys to do the same. "I don't look at the comments because they'll say, oh yeah, they'll put people away for drugs, but not child molesters. And if you put a child molester away for life, they'll say, yeah, but not in our case. If you put a murderer away, they go, yeah, but you probably won't do that for a child molester." Again, everybody reacts based on their personal circumstances, Bland said. What makes Texas unusual is that it's the only one of the handful of states that allows defendants who go to trial to choose who will they impose their sentence, a jury or the judge. Most states opt to have judges impose sentences, arguing that when judges impose sentences, they tend to be proportionate to the crimes they commit, and there's more uniformity when defendants in similar cases are compared. Kentucky, Arkansas, Missouri, and Oklahoma have similar sentencing practices to Texas. But 2 years ago, Virginia joined all the other states and allowed judges to make those decisions. According to an Associated Press story, legislators changed the 224-year law after a fierce debate. Supporters of a change said that giving judging the sentences responsibility would result in fairer sentences. But prosecutors predicted it would result in more jury trials and therefore require additional judges, court clerks, and public defenders. Galvin is just fine with the way Texas does things and haven't heard any rumblings about changing things. He doesn't subscribe to the idea that jurors are more likely to allow anger to influence their sentencing decisions after all, he said. Judges are people too. "I think if we switched to letting the judges do it all their decisions, you'd probably end up with higher sentences, which I personally am opposed to," Galvin said. "But I personally like the idea of the community setting the punishment because that gives us an idea of how they think about certain cases when we're working on a plea agreement. That's nice to know what the community thinks of certain cases. Believe it or not, we get similar fact patterns over and over again." Galvin said some of the attorneys opt not to recommend specific sentences due to sentencing phases of trials. Some always name a number. You can count on that to ask for the highest sentence possible. "My general philosophy is that if we go to trial and we get to the point in the trial, I'm going to ask for the maximum because the defendant had the opportunity to take responsibility, get less than they did, and they didn't. Now a jury obviously may disagree," Galvin said. Bland, too, likes Texas sentencing structure. I love being in the state where the defendant gets to choose whether their peers do it or the judge does. I think it's important to let citizens have a voice in their sentence and obviously gives the defendants options on how they're going to proceed, Bland said. Another former Ayrton County District Attorney, Mike Holmes, said every case is different, and so his advice when it comes to sentencing varies. It depends on the judge. There are some cases I definitely think should go before a jury. As a defense lawyer, my problem with sentencing is that I think they're too harsh in the sentence on average. But I don't blame jurors for that. I blame the system, Holmes said. In Texas, prosecutors can ask for enhanced sentencing for habitual offenders and often do, even when the third offense is for a relatively minor crime, Holmes said. I look at other countries and I look at other states, and our sentencings are far harsher. Then, of course, some people like that. Unless it's their son or daughter, Holmes said. Over the last several months, there have been a pretty wide difference in jury verdicts on similar cases. I do like jurors as a general rule, but I think the sentences in Texas are too harsh. Defense attorney Michael McLeish said one of the problems with the existing sentencing laws is that jurors don't have all the facts when making their sentencing decisions. Specifically, jurors are not told the judges have the option of making their sentences run consecutively, which is what happens in the Garcia case. As a result, jurors may think a defendant is going to get one sentence, but they end up getting double. And most judges are likely to stack the sentences, he said. Justices are elected, and they're aware of the public's perception that harsh sentencing may be imposed, McLeish said. They're not going to be handling out lenient sentences because some lawyer is going to pick up on it and use it when he runs against them. McLeish remembers being fired by a client facing 25 counts of child pornography because he recommended he accept a plea agreement offered by the state. The defendant went to trial, was convicted on all 25 charges, and sentenced to 7 years on each count. The judge ran them consecutively, so he was sentenced to 175 years in prison. McLeish is convinced the judge, left to make the decision by himself, would have given him the maximum sentence of 10 years on each count and stacked them for a total of 250 years. He'd like the law to be changed so that either jurors can be told judges have the option of imposing sentences concurrently or consecutively. Or, alternatively, he'd like jurors to be given the ability to recommend concurrent or consecutive sentences. In some cases, defendants are given sentences where they'd have to die or be resurrected to complete them, McLeish said. There are pros and cons to both, allowing jurors to impose sentences on judges. The attorneys all agree. Asking jurors for leniency when you've just gotten done arguing there's no guilty of the crime is a difficult pivot, Bland said. You have to try your best to change gears appropriately. I've seen defense attorneys get angry at jurors, and it doesn't always go so well, Bland said. When deciding what evidence to put on during the sentencing phase, defense attorneys have to consider what went during the deliberation. How quickly did a jury come back? What questions did they ask? Were there any obvious decisions within the jury, Bland said? Providing jurors with mitigating evidence is important, but attorneys have to be careful not to alienate the jurors. The defense attorneys agreed. Although there have been few exceptions, Galvin said it's been at least 20 years since Texas have overhauled its sentencing guidelines. In one exception, lawmakers agreed to enhance assault of a pregnant woman to a felony. In recent years, there have been complaints that intoxication manslaughter and certain other vehicular death cases are only second-degree felonies, punishable by 2 to 20 years, Galvin said. We can't change that. By law, that's what it is. If people think it's too low, they need to ask the legislatures to change it, Galvin said. If it's multiple people or if there are certain other facts, you should be able to upgrade it to a first degree. Same thing with racing if they kill somebody. Obviously, we see a lot of those.
Here are additional articles from the Odessa American, published Sunday, August 7th. Teens arrested following shots fired at Sherwood Park. 1 week after a shooting at Sherwood Park, the Odessa Police Department announced the arrest of two 16-year-olds on aggravated robbery and deadly conduct charges. One of the teens also faces a charge for shooting 3 days earlier. On July 29th, OPD announced three kids took shelter inside the pool area of Sherwood Park after someone took three shots at them and fled. According to the announcement Friday, two juvenile suspects are now being held at the Ector County Youth Center. One of the two youths is also charged with discharge of a firearm in certain municipalities in connection with the July 26th shooting incident in the 3100 block of Maple. Officers found three firearms, two of which had been reported stolen, during their investigation. No further details were made available on the apparent robbery at Sherwood Park or the incident on Maple. The newspaper filed a Texas Public Information Act request with the department on Wednesday.
Obituary. Terry Whitaker, San Antonio. Terry Lean Simpkins Whitaker, 65, of Odessa, Texas, passed away on Thursday, August 4th, in Odessa, Texas, with her loving husband by her side. Viewing will be held Monday, August 8th, at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home from 4 to 8. A graveside service will be held at 10 Tuesday, August 9th, at Sunset Memorial Gardens with Shane Beneke of Community Bible Church officiating. All family and friends are welcome to attend. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home. Terry was born in Odessa, Texas, to Martha and Roy Simpkins on July 22, 1957. She went to Odessa High School. She married Ricky Whitaker on April 1, 1978. With one of Terry's favorite hobbies was shopping estate sales and garage sales. She had the ability to find the best bargains. When she wasn't bargain hunting, she was on the golf course, traveling, or spending time with her family. Terry was the backbone of the family and always taking care of everyone else. She was the very best grandma to her first four grandkids. She absolutely loved being a grandma. Terry is preceded in death by Roy Simpkins and Randy Simpkins. Terry is survived by her spouse, Ricky Whitaker, son Jeremy Whitaker, Sherry Justin Whitaker, and Meredith. Mother, Martha Simpkins, brother Kevin Simpkins, and Teresa, nieces Haley and Austin Reynolds and Lindsay, and four grandchildren. The family of Terry Whitaker wishes to extend our sincere thanks to Brian Lane and Michaela of Angela Care Hospice of Texas Oncology. Arrangements are entrusted to Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home. To send condolences to the family, please sign her guest book, sunsetodessa.com. Death notices. Diane McDaniel, Midland. Diane McDaniel, 78, of Monahans, died Friday, August 5th, in Midland. Funeral service is scheduled for 10:30 a.m. August 10th at First Baptist Church. Burial to follow Monahans Memorial Cemetery. Chris Powell is officiating. Arrangements are by Harkey Funeral Home of Monahans, Texas.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Odessa American for Monday, August 8th. Basin PBS to host Keeping Kids Safe. With all the tragic events of recent months, Basin PBS has organized a live town hall titled Keeping Kids Safe. The event will be broadcast at 7 p.m. August 11th and will run for an hour. Quote, if people want to come and sit in the audience, they just need to call for a seat because we have limited seating, General Manager and CEO Laura Wolf said. We are opening up the studio to about 40 people, first come, first served, if they want to come and watch it. It's the first time we've opened up the studio since COVID, so I'm excited, she added. Wolf said they are getting quite a few inquiries about the town hall because it is an important topic and people are very interested. She stressed that it will not be a gotcha town hall. The broadcast will be live-streamed on the Basin PBS Facebook page so people can submit questions. The panel will include the superintendents from Odessa and Midland, top cops from Odessa and Midland, the new safety coordinator for Midland ISD, and a safety officer from the ECISD Police Department. Also, a mental health professional from Texas Tech University Health Sciences Center. Becky Ferguson, a Basin PBS board member and special correspondent, will be the moderator. Quote, of course, school safety has been on the mind of people for a long time, but after Uvalde and it hitting so close to us being in Texas, we really felt the need to educate West Texas on what our resources are and what we are doing as a community to keep our kids safe. It's not a gotcha town hall at all. It is to let parents and viewers know of all the resources that have been utilized to keep our kids safe, Wolf said. She added that she has talked to Midland Police Chief Seth Herman and Odessa Police Chief Mike Gerke, and they don't mind addressing the failures at Uvalde, quote, but they were hopeful in that they don't believe that we would ever have that issue in Midland or Odessa. But I do think that Uvalde has raised awareness for not only parents, but for law enforcement and people that were hired to keep our kids safe, so we're just trying to address that, Wolf added. Wolf said that they have done a lot of marketing for this town hall with cable advertising and social media. Quote, it is on everybody's mind right now as kids start back to school next week, Wolf said. She added that people may be experiencing a little bit of trepidation and fear about their children going back to school. Quote, we want to address that and let kids and parents know that what they're feeling is normal, but also that we have the resources to protect them and to help alleviate that fear. We still want them to be kids at school, do all their activities, have fun, and learn, and not have to worry, Wolf said. She added that she thinks people will come away from the town hall feeling more confident in their school districts and in the resources that the school districts and cities have put behind them as well. Wolf said Basin PBS started broadcasting town halls about a year ago. Quote, I think that they're a valuable resource for West Texans, she said.
To Your Good Health by Dr. Keith Roach. Pelvic Organ Prolapse Surgery. Dear Dr. Roach, please tell the public about prolapses that women may experience and the fact that surgery may be totally successful. I was lucky to find my surgeon, and after surgery, have a dandy little old body. A majority of women do not know about the problems nor the solutions. Answer. Many women experience pelvic organ prolapse, especially older women who have had one or more children. The symptoms that alert a woman may be varied, but one screening question that identified most women with this issue is whether they had symptoms of a bulge or that something is falling out of the vagina. Other symptoms include urinary incontinence, difficulty voiding, and problems with bowel movements, either constipation or incontinence. Many women do not bring these symptoms up with their regular doctor, so I am glad you wrote. Unfortunately, some doctors are not experts at making the diagnosis of mild prolapse by examination, so consultation with a gynecologist is ideal. Women with mild prolapse and no symptoms do not need treatment. Many women with mild symptoms will do well with conservative treatment such as a vaginal pessary, a silicone device that supports the pelvic organ. Pelvic floor muscle exercises also may be tried before considering surgery. Surgery is indicated when conservative treatments have not been effective. I am glad you had a good outcome with surgery because not all women are so lucky. A third, or perhaps half, of women who get surgery for prolapse will require a second surgery for recurrence of symptoms.
This is the Dear Abby column. Recovered granddaughter fighting for independence. Dear Abby, I have been in what feels like a war with my grandmother. She always took care of me and my younger brother and sister. She was there when we couldn't be with our parents. For a long time, I was troubled and into addiction. I admit I lost sight of who I really was. I had two sons I didn't raise, but now I'm back and 1 year and 3 months clean. I'm enjoying spending my time with the son I'm still in contact with. I have always lived with my grandmother. Now that I'm taking control of my life and reaching the point where I'm ready to move away with my son, she's fighting me. She has many bad things to say about my past and a lot of things to throw in my face. After all this time, I thought she would be happy for me. Instead, I am encountering outright disrespect and ugliness. I have always known my grandmother could be hateful, but now it's turned up to full volume. Am I wrong for wanting to be with my son? I'm tired of crying all the time over this. Signed, Breaking the Cycle. Dear Breaking, because of your history, your grandmother may be fearful for the welfare of her great-grandson. However, if you are clean, sober, and capable of caring for yourself and your child without her assistance, then it's time to graduate to independence. Tell your grandmother you love her and are grateful for all of the care she has given you. Then proceed with the move without burning any bridges, if that's possible. Dear Abby, I have had a friend for 30 years whom I have helped with advice and money many times. He is often rude and short-tempered. I never expected anything in return, but I have often had to turn the other cheek because of his behavior. Recently, he had a collection of auto parts he was going to sell. When I asked if I could buy a few of them, he refused because he wanted to sell the parts as a group. I was disappointed. It was the first time in 30 years I had asked him for a favor, but again, I turned the other cheek. I recently learned that he gave away all the auto parts for free to his neighbors. I asked him about it, but didn't want to make a big deal out of it because I didn't want to see an argument. He shrugged it off like it was nothing. I was shocked because he always has financial problems, so giving the parts away for free instead of selling a few to me was baffling. Should I overlook this, or is it time to end the friendship? Signed, Disappointed in Michigan. Dear Disappointed, the person you have described is not, and never was, your friend. He refused to let you buy the auto parts because he wanted to charge you more for the whole kit and caboodle. When there were no other takers, he dumped them on whoever would take them. You have been a supportive friend, and your reward was being treated rudely. By all means, end this one-way arrangement. The next time he asks you for something, and he will, feel free to refuse. You can write to Dear Abby at dearabby.com or P.O. Box 69440, Los Angeles, California, 90069. Her column is distributed by Universal Press Syndicate.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.